become a member of the Movie Geeks United family. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/MovieGeeksUnite, Facebook at facebook.com/MovieGeeksUnited, YouTube at youtube.com/MovieGeeksUnited, or bookmark our website at MovieGeeksUnited.net. And you can also access our entire library of programs, including more than 600 filmmaker interviews, right here on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/MovieGeeksUnited. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Movie Geeks United Art of Cinematography series. Tonight, we replay an interview we did in 2009 with acclaimed cinematographer Sam Levy. Mr. Levy's work includes early experiences in films like Velvet Goldmine, The Yards, Party Monster, and Pieces of April. Since then, he's become a cinematographer of great note, particularly in the world of independent film, with films like Wendy and Lucy, The Romantics, and Frances Ha. We spoke with Mr. Levy on the occasion of the release of Wendy and Lucy in 2009.
What kind of car are we talking about?
It's an Accord, 1988.
It's
right over there.
Well, easy enough to replace serpentine belt. I don't know why the ignition won't fire, though. Who knows? Could be the timing belt.
How much did the new serpentine belt?
Oh, $100, $125. Depends on if we have to order a new one. I'll have to check stock. And be $50 for labor. That's the best you'll find, I promise that.
Okay, and what about a timing belt? How much is that?
It could be a little bit more, but I won't know until I have a look.
Okay.
And we're going to have to tow it over, I guess. That adds another $50.
But it's just right there.
Well, it's always $50, but there's no mileage here, so it's just $50.
The first film or video that I ever worked on was when I was in high school, and I used to do theater. I was an actor, like a high school, junior high and high school actor. Mm-hmm. And that was my first love, was doing theater. And a friend of mine used to videotape stuff, and he'd play around with, at that time, a half-inch VHS video camera. And then he started making these little short videos, and he'd have me be in them. And we had a lot of fun doing that. And basically, when I went on to college, where I was a literature student, I was a comparative literature student, I had an extra course my second year of college, and there was a filmmaking production class, and I just sort of thought, why not go for it? So I talked to the teacher, and I dug up some of these old videos that I had participated in, and convinced her to let me join her 16mm film production class. And from there, it sort of took it and ran.
At that point, you knew that it was a cinematography that interested you.
What happened was I studied with this fantastic woman. I studied at Brown University as a comparative literature student at Brown, And I took a fantastic film course there with a woman named Leslie Thornton, who's an experimental filmmaker and a real genius and inspiration and mentor of mine. But anyways, I was in her class, which was really kind of slanted towards the experimental, which was a great way to start out,
right,
and not sort of narrative filmmaking. And it was in making short films in this class that I very quickly figured out that I loved the kind of photographic side of what we were doing. And the thing was, I'd never done any still photography or anything like that. Most of the other students in the class, I'd say just about all of them, had handled, you know, a 35 millimeter film camera and understood the about, you know, shutter speeds and how to use a light meter. I didn't know any of that. So it was sort of, in the beginning, you know, I started to really fall in love with just being behind the camera and that sort of thing. And at first I thought, well, I'm not one of these, I haven't been prepared. I just didn't think like that. But the teacher, Leslie, was very encouraging about these things. And one thing led to another, and I decided to try to get a summer job that summer in the film business. And I ended up getting an internship here in New York at a commercial production company and found my way onto a set. And I was at that moment, when I was on my first real movie set, although it was for a commercial, that my eyes gravitated right towards the DP, towards the cinematographer, and then also at the camera assistants that were kind of buzzing around him.
Right.
It was a DP named Fred Murphy, the guy who shot Hoosiers and many, many great films. And he just seemed like this kind of mystical person. I knew what a cinematographer was, but I'd never actually seen one in action. And it was a big an American Express commercial, actually. And it just seemed like a fantastic thing. And I looked right at him, and I thought, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, yeah. But when you were conscious of cinematography and you knew that direction you wanted to take with your life, did you start looking at films differently, and what DPs were most influential to you just by viewing their work?
Well, it's a great question. That same summer, when I was on the set with Fred Murphy, it was the same summer that the film Visions of Light came out in theaters. So it was this sort of very eye-opening time, and I went to the theaters and saw Visions of Light, where they talk about all these great DPs like Gordon Willis and Vittorio Storaro, Owen Roizman, and some of the older school DPs like Arthur Miller and Orson Welles DP on Citizen Kane, Greg
Toland, yeah,
Greg Toland.
I love the scene in that movie. They're talking about In Cold Blood, and the raindrops running down Robert Blake's face. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up with that part of that documentary.
It's great.
That's a great one.
And that same thing happened to me, sitting there in that theater watching that, and I'd already decided that's what I wanted to do, but I walked out of the theater sort of very inspired. But aside from that documentary, I would say almost from the get-go, I'd already started to watch movies prior to actually, taking this course and striking out in the film business. The first two filmmakers I really started to look at movies differently were Kurosawa and Ingmar Bergman. I watched those movies, and then once I started to become more interested in cinematography, it was really Gordon Willis's work that that just stood out above everything else to me, no matter what it was. The first thing I really studied was the first two Godfather films, but then once I learned that he existed, and that you know, he was the work was special, and in addition to it being special, he was this interesting risk-taking character who, the more I worked in the business, the more I'd hear, you know, these mythological stories about him. But then I started to see, you know, I saw films like The Parallax View and Woody, you know, the Woody Allen movies he did, especially particularly Interiors, which just a fantastic work of cinematography to me. And
that's interesting too, because you have some very you started from experimental filmmaking, and you have some very experimental credits to your name. And Gordon Willis is somebody like that, where in some of the biggest films, like A Godfather 2, I mean, he's really experimenting and pushing what is possible with that work.
Yeah. He's doing that, which is incredible. You know, once you start to understand the technical properties of what he was doing, it's amazing. But moreover, what's amazing is just, you know, what the work does for the films and for the stories. It really serves the stories so well, and it's really breathtaking, but it's not ostentatious or gaudy, and it doesn't stand out, it doesn't distract. If anything, it just helps the viewer engage, which is just, that's everything in cinematography no matter what it is, whether it's an experimental film where it's a nonlinear narrative or the most traditional linear type of narrative. I think, you know, cinematography in some way can be many different ways, is really should just help the viewer engage in some way or another. She should hold the viewer's interest and not, you know, distract in some sort of in that same regard.
Let's talk about Wendy and Lucy. I understand that you really campaigned for this one. How did you get a hold of the script, and what were those initial impressions?
Well, the first person to call me for the script was one of the executive producers, who is also a director, named Phil Morrison, who directed Junebug. He was the first person to call me. Kelly Reichert had been preparing the film almost from the moment she finished up her previous film, Old Joy.
Right.
And she started prepping and was looking for someone. And Phil called me and asked if I was interested. And I hadn't even seen a script. I didn't know anything about Wendy and Lucy, which at that time was called Train Choir, and was through the entire production until later. But just on the strength of Old Joy, I was very interested. And I practically said, you know, I'll commit right now. I'd love to do the director of Old Joy's next movie.
Yeah.
I was actually in an airport. I was going to North Carolina to shoot a commercial. And when I got that phone call, I was waiting to check in line. And before I even got to the front of the line, I concluded that phone call with Phil, and Kelly then called me probably several minutes later. We spoke a little bit. She explained that it was she was looking for someone, and you know, they were going to start fairly soon. I think it was probably, you know, maybe a month away. I basically then and there said, I'm interested. I'd love to see the script, but, you know, I'm very interested. It sounds fantastic. They sort of explained a little about the story. And I think that night they sent me the script, but I had already decided in my mind that, you know, I was in. If they wanted me, I was in. And what sort of happened was I flew to North Carolina to work on this commercial, and I read the script and basically said, it's fantastic. I'd love to be this movie's DP. And, you know, I'd been planning to go. I live in New York City, and I was planning to go back to New York after the commercial, but instead, what Kelly said was, you sound great. I'd like to do this, but it's tough. You know, it's tough to hire someone when you haven't actually met them, which I totally understood. And so I said, well, why don't I, she was in Portland at that moment, Portland, Oregon, where the movie was shot. And I suggested, well, why don't I just come out to Portland in a few days when I'm done with this commercial. And she said, oh, no, you know, I couldn't pay for your flight. I said, that's all right. You know, I'll pay for my flight. So I came out, and she and her producer, a different producer, picked me up at the airport. And we basically, that day, we almost started scouting immediately. Dropped my bags off at an apartment that they had rented for me. We scouted, we had a few conversations, and we didn't really talk about, you know, it got to the end of the day, and we were sort of about, they were going to drop me off at the apartment, and I said, well, I just got to ask you guys, am I your DP? And Kelly, very funny, Kelly said, oh, no, we're not letting you leave. So at that point it was official, which was great.
Yeah.
So I just stayed in Portland. I thought, well, maybe I'll go back to New York, then I'll come back. But it became clear very quickly that there was, you know, I really had to do the movie the right way and to do right by Kelly. I really had to stay. So it turned from this, you know, going to North Carolina for a couple of days, for 4 days maybe, to do a commercial to, you know, it turned into a 3-month trip where I didn't return back to New York City to almost 3 months.
Wow. Tell me what is special about that area of Oregon as it pertains to this movie. Why does it work so well for this particular story in your eyes?
Well, I should start by answering that question by saying that I'd never been to Portland, Oregon before.
Mm-hmm.
Before I flew out there to meet Kelly and then to shoot this movie. So to me, what was special is it's, you know, Portland's a wonderful, vibrant, yet small city with a fantastic community. And, you know, as a person who lives in New York City, which is, you know, very dense, concrete, vertical world, it just seemed to have, you know, there was a lot of space and was warm and, you know, it's not as frantic and just a different energy. You know, it's Pacific Northwest. There's just a different vibe to the culture out there, which was completely new to me. So I was very sensitive to that. You know, Kelly had just, you know, her last movie prior to Wendy and Lucy was Old Joy, which was also shot in and around Portland.
Right.
So to her, there was a lot of, you know, it was the Wendy and Lucy thing, no matter how you slice it, was an extension of that prior movie in Portland. For me, it was, the whole thing was new. Well, working with Kelly was new. Shooting a movie in Portland was new. But okay, so aside from that, Portland is a fantastic place to shoot a movie because it's a very friendly place to shoot a movie, particularly one that's an independent movie with a limited budget, which Wendy and Lucy is. It was it's a small movie. We shot it in 20 days. We had a decent amount of locations, and we relied heavily on the community there to, you know, for locations and for,
right.
Things like that. And it just always felt like it's such a supportive community. We had a fantastic location manager, Roger Fares, who, for everybody it was a labor of love and with no attitude. And I was amazed. I was amazed that just how friendly people were. And it somehow translates into the locations in the film that you see, even though it's a sad story about a person, about a woman who's down on her luck. But to me, there's a there's a luscious quality to a lot of those locations that I just sensed, you know, in Portland itself. And since, again, it was so new to me, it's a place that made me happy. And everyone who worked on the movie, except for Kelly, who is from New York City also, everyone, the crew, we're all people from Portland. So what was great was we weren't just there filming in Portland. We were working with people who live in Portland and are part of the community. And it was just a wonderful new experience to be with these great people who are so passionate about the project and believed in it as much as I did and believed in Kelly as much as I did. And because of Old Joy and just because of friends that she has there, Kelly is a very beloved person in Portland. And all of that went into the making of the movie.
What was the kind of direction that she wanted to take with the camera? What were those conversations?
Well, Kelly, first of all, you know, Kelly has an amazing eye. She's an incredible visual director, and just in basic sense of composition and blocking and extending into mise-en-scène and the way she directs, she has a great sense of how things will play out visually and in a way that I love. It's a subtle execution, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just sort of her way of working. The first things that we did the first things that she did to explain the visual approach was to, you know, we watched a few movies just to discuss them. We watched Pather Panchali by Satyajit Ray. We watched Mouchette by Robert Bresson. We watched a few other things, and through that, it just helped, since we had just met basically for the first time, it just helped us start to develop a language. One of the first things that she talked about was the use of medium shots, and in a way to capture the character of Wendy. And that was one thing that came out of our discussions of looking at Robert Bresson's work. And it was she never showed me anything, and we never aped anything or copied anything. It was never like that. But she just talked about utilizing medium shots, and it was as simple as that, but the way that she described it was just sort of like, you could tell that she didn't have an arbitrary, random approach to how the story was going to be photographed and how it was going to be blocked. And in other words, like, Kelly isn't the kind of person to approach a scene and just sort of hose it down, as they say, or, you know, do a lot of coverage and figure it out later. She figures it out as it's being blocked in an amazing, very efficient way. That was clear even just in our beginning discussions. And Manny, she was always sure about where the camera should go, where the actor should go. And so a lot of times I was just really reacting to her absolute certainty of how things should work. And
Do you have a favorite kind of moment from the film? And also, when you view the film, are you able to separate the experience of viewing it from the experience of what you shot that day?
I'll answer the first question.
Okay.
Off the top of my head, there's one favorite moment. Is that kind of the question?
Yes.
Your favorite moment?
Yeah.
There's a few moments that I really like, but I'd say, just off the top of my head, my favorite moment is the moment when Wendy calls home to her sister and her brother-in-law, and the scene, it's just one shot. It's, you know, Kelly Reichert at her best, There's no coverage. It's all one shot, basically a medium. And we were inside of a shop looking at her on a payphone through glass, and there's all kinds of great reflections on the glass. And
yeah.
I like that moment. It was initially we were going to try and do it during the day or at dusk, and then the sun fell. I did have to illuminate Michelle a little bit, and this thing that to me just is really great happened. All these cars are going by and reflections on the window, and yet to me it's not too obtrusive, and I'm just very happy with that moment.
Now that you said that, the way it was shot through the store window, at times it seems it is a very unobtrusive camera. And at times it feels like it's almost eavesdropping on her, you know, following her through this experience.
That was the intent, was to give it that feeling so that, you know, the way you look at her isn't you don't think about it too much. It is as if you're just watching things unfold.
Right. It's beautiful, beautiful.
And then the answer to your second question, you know, is it hard to separate? Can I just watch the movie?
Right.
I would say at first it was very hard for me to just watch the movie. When I saw the first edit, when Kelly sort of had picture locked it, and I saw it, and my first instinct was, I like it. I really like it. But a million thoughts were bouncing around in my head, and then it premiered at Cannes, and that was the first time we saw it with an audience, and I still felt the same way. I was just sort of taking it in. I thought I really like it, but I still don't know what I'm watching. And then there was a great moment that was very satisfying where it premiered in the U.S. at the New York Film Festival at the Ziegfeld, which was great. And we'd gotten the print to a place that we were really happy with, that I was really thrilled with. And at that moment, I was able to just sort of kick back and enjoy it. The best thing was that Kelly seemed really happy with the movie. And you know, I respect her so much, the director. That was, you know, she had a smile on her face. I felt like I'd done my job in some way. And at that moment, she was happy. I was happy with the print, and you know, my mom was there, some friends there, and it was great. That was probably the first time I watched it and felt relaxed, and just sort of took it in. Of course, I'd seen it many times, knew the movie very well, but I felt like I was watching it in the most objective sort of way for the first time that evening.
Yeah, well, it is a beautiful film, and you did beautiful work on it. And Sam, thank you, buddy.
No problem. It's my pleasure.
That's it for this episode of The Art of Cinematography. You can find more of our interviews from this series at moviegeeksunited.net/artofcinematography.